We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Today we're going to stay with the offense and talk to wide receiver Ronnie Bell. We've got some updates on the new podcast that is coming next week, plus an app for the kids. We'll talk about it next here on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
It is a blast to be around all those guys, and they all train. So, I mean, like, it's just so exciting because, like you said, last year, a lot of guys got their feet in the water, and then Nico coming back, I mean, it's just like, I'm head over heels excited for what the season's going to bring.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends. And before we get to Ronnie Bell, we got some business that we want to take care of. I mentioned, and we've been talking about this all week for a couple of weeks, really. We have a new podcast coming on Tuesday, and that is called Conquering Heroes. Remember, it may look a little different in regards to what you see. If you're already a subscriber, it will look like MGoBlue Podcast with John Jansen. In the Trenches will remain. It will be a part of that feed, and it will be exclusively football. The Conquering Heroes podcast, our first guest will be Daryl Conway. You've heard him here before. You'll hear him again. Give us an update on the reintroduction of the student-athletes and how the testing is going, and a look ahead to what we might see for practice, not just for football, but for all of the fall sports. He'll give us an update. That is coming on Tuesday. Later in the week, next week, Friday, August 7th, the Kids Go Blue Club, presented by UMCU, is launching a new app. And again, that will come on Friday. The app will include tons of interactive elements like trivia, polls, videos, an at-home event that checks you in. Members can also receive exclusives like MDN discounts or Zoom meetings with some of your favorite Wolverines. I will be on one at the end of August, so make sure you find out more about that at mgoblueclub.com/kidsclub and make sure you're signed up for all of those events. Mr. Bush, how are you as you prepare for the weekend?
I'm doing great. It's hard to believe. It's August coming up this weekend. And by the way, if you're going to do any of those Zoom calls with John, he's got a great backdrop option when he's on those calls.
Yeah, I might have to have a slideshow. There's a couple of great ones. And again, make sure that you are signed up because you don't want to miss that exciting event.
No doubt about it. But before we get into the weekend, and before we get to that first Conquering Heroes with Daryl Conway, some of the stuff that you'll be talking about with Daryl and that he's been working tirelessly on in recent weeks is the start of our Since We Last Talked for this episode. A letter from the Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren went out to the league's 14 athletics directors. It was on Thursday. It got out to the public via Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic on Friday. Here are some of those key takeaways. The decision on preseason camp starting as currently scheduled, which would be soon, here in about a week, will come by early next week for Big Ten institutions. And Commissioner Warren said it's dependent on the desired execution of testing protocols being in place. More specifically, there being an adequate number of tests for fall sport team members. Also coming next week, the league will release its medical policies and protocols. Commissioner Warren emphasized in this letter as well that any participation in fall sports is voluntary. The decisions about how that might affect student-athletes' eligibility moving forward, how that affects limits on eligibility for programs, that's still to be determined. But if someone in the Big Ten wants to opt out, they'll maintain their scholarship. They will remain in good standing with their team. And kind of most importantly, in terms of the context of football, we know that the Big Ten will have conference-only schedules. There's no real update, but we know it's not coming on Friday, at least according to letter, because the schedule will come out sometime in August 2020, according to the letter. Quote, while we remain hopeful for a start in September 2020, flexibility has been created within our scheduling models to accommodate necessary adjustments. Consistent with our collective need to be adaptable to changes in circumstances and evolving medical knowledge, even issuing a schedule does not guarantee that competition will occur. John, you've read the letter. Those are the bullet points. What are your biggest takeaways?
My biggest takeaway is that, again, they're just trying to buy more time. We heard earlier today that Indiana will be back at work. They've had a two-week quarantine. They're back working out. Michigan State is in the middle of a quarantine and a hold-off, a pause button, you might say. Rutgers has done it. We've seen Ohio State do it. So to think that we're going to start at the same time, I don't necessarily know that that'll happen. But if we do get a look at a schedule, because we've heard news from across the country in terms of the Power Five, that they are still continuing to work on schedules. They're trying to work on when those would start. We're going to see a wide array of start dates. We're going to see a wide array of, you know, pauses, and, you know, it's going to be a stop and go throughout the season. But what I do like is, one, that it is the student athlete's choice, that they will remain in good standing. If they are not comfortable playing, they don't have to. But I do believe that most of these kids that I have talked to, there have been some, you know, across the country that have said, hey, I'm not comfortable doing this. I don't want to play this year under these circumstances for a lot of different reasons. And that's okay. But there are also a lot of kids, a majority of them, that say, hey, I understand the risk involved. I understand that we're doing everything we can to stay healthy, to stay safe, and I want to play. So I think that either one is a good choice for these kids to make, and it's a very personal decision. I'm glad to see that Kevin Warren continues to say that, hey, that it is up to the kids, and we will decide ultimately as a conference whether we are going to play or not, what it's going to look like, how we will go about it, all of the things that we are still waiting to hear in terms of testing and the protocol and that they're going to have in place. But to me, I love it that they have given the student athlete a choice.
You mentioned some of the current circumstances around some Big Ten programs. Indiana, they paused for 2 weeks. They're resuming workouts on Friday. They had 33 positives over 480 tests since beginning the testing process. Per NJ.com, an on-campus party was what triggered the COVID-19 outbreak involving Rutgers football. 15 team members testing positive within Rutgers football program. You alluded to Michigan State being involved with that quarantine right now as well. And the reality is, if college football happens, we're not going to see zero positive tests nationally. It's just not going to happen. But the Big Ten needs better results from what we've seen from a few of these programs. And hopefully these situations will be wake-up calls and important ones, a la what we talked about in baseball with the Miami Marlins as we get into August.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, and kids are going to test positive across the country at every single program. But when you think about what's going on across the Big Ten, and then you look at Michigan's football program and not having to hit the pause button yet, it doesn't mean that they won't, but you're not hearing about kids going out and partying or doing those things. They are getting the message. And the one thing that I have learned, and everybody's going to hear it from Ronnie Bell today, We've heard it from Josh Ross. We've heard it from David Ojabo. We heard it from Carlo Kemp. Every single player reiterates, hey, we can only control what we can control. And they are taking care of business on their end. They can't control whether they actually play or not. But if you have to hit the pause button, that's not a great sign. And I truly believe out of all 14 teams in the Big Ten, that at some point, every single program is going to have to hit the pause button and restart. But it's hopefully because, you know, it's something that's legitimate, not that they're going out to party. So my hat's off to the Michigan football players and program and the leadership involved from Jim Harbaugh, Ward Manuel, all the way down to the assistant coaches. I think they're doing a great job of letting these kids know how important it is. And then the seniors. This is going to be a huge year for senior leadership. They are doing a tremendous job of making sure that everybody understands, you know, the cause and effect of what it means to go out and party, what it means to take a risk, and the risk that you put your team at.
John, throughout college football, the most relevant news since we last talked came out of the Southeastern Conference, the league adopting a 10-game SEC-only schedule. The league will not start until September 26th, with the SEC title game scheduled for December 19th. So they've got 10 regular season games in 12 weeks. There will be one open date in the midst of the season, and then all teams will have December 12th off in case they need to push games back. John, this is the most detailed schedule philosophy we've seen from a Power 5 league so far. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think it's good. Again, it buys time. It gives more opportunity. You're not going to start practice then until the end of August or the beginning of September. So it buys time. And what you are going to be seeing from these different schools and different programs is that when students, the general population, come back to campus, I do believe there'll be a spike, and it could be in football programs, it could be in fall sports teams, but it's when you bring people from around the country, from around the world, to a you know, one city, you're bound to have new infections. And I think this allows for that to take place, to be able to weather the storm, get things to normalize, and then start playing football at the end of September. I think this is an outstanding plan. But again, I think we're going to see across the country, because there are so many different regions and handling it in different ways, that some may start in week zero, which is at the end of August. Some may start as late as October. And that's just, it's going to be a weird year with lots of different schedules, lots of different matrix. And it's just going to be how it is for the foreseeable future.
In terms of updates for the other three Power 5 leagues we haven't discussed, the ACC did announce its new schedule matrix, not the order of games and the dates of the games, but just establishing a team's home and road foes within league play. The ACC, as of now, hoping to play 10 league games and one non-conference game. The caveat to the non-con is that it must be at home or against an in-state road opponent. Big 12, they've postponed their virtual media days, which were scheduled for Monday. That's all that they've really done officially, though Brett McMurphy of Stadium reported that the league has three models for a potential schedule: 9 league games only, 9 league games plus one non-conference game, and 12 games, which McMurphy reports is the least likely of the three, that full 12-game schedule. Pac-12, we talked about some reports around them, conference-only 10-game setup, three different dates for the championship game, but they have not released anything as of the time we're putting this together on Friday afternoon officially. Also, John, of note, postseason-wise, ESPN's Heather Dinich had a conversation with the head of the college football playoff, Bill Hancock, and he said that they will be evaluating a new timetable for committee meetings, the protocols for admission into the playoff due to the unique circumstances for 2020. Quote, "This year will be different. Golly, it will be challenging, but the committee is built to handle it. The fundamental mission has not changed. That is, rank the best four teams based on the schedules that the conferences play, and that is why the committee comprises these 13 football experts," end quote. Outside of the awesome golly that Mr. Hancock used, your favorite takeaways from this?
Well, I don't know that I have any favorite takeaways other than, you know, yeah, the the football experts, and I'm using air quotes on the radio, are supposed to be able to pick the four best teams. It's going to be really hard because there's going to be no common opponents. It's going to be a big challenge. And I think that the, you know, we're all human, and the experts are human as well. And the bias towards conferences, I mean, the Pac-12 hasn't been in the college football playoffs in the past 3 years. And I think there's to think that their bias in regards to strength of conference and what they know from past seasons won't play into it, I think would be kind of foolish. I think this would be a great opportunity. And I've talked about this for 3 or 4 months now, really since the quarantine started, and we start thinking about what could possibly happen this year. This would be a great opportunity to get a sneak peek at 6 or 8 teams. If they can't decide who those four are, now there's some logistical, you know, questions in return in regards to where they would play that extra game, even if we can play that extra game. But the contract isn't up for another 5 years for the college football playoffs. Why would we have an opportunity right now to see how it would work as a one-off. And then next year we go back to the four teams. And then in 5 years, we can make a little bit more of an educated decision as to, do we want to keep it four? How did it go in 2020 when we had 6 or we had 8? And I think it's just, it would give a little bit of information to, do we really want to expand it or do we like it the way it is at four?
Yeah, I mean, I think in college basketball, the idea has been floated of a 96-team NCAA tournament just for this year, just to see what it's like. It's a unique year. Let's throw in some unique circumstances. All right, John, some Michigan football questions for you. We haven't done a whole lot of that because, well, we've had some wild stuff. We had to create a segment called Since We Last Talked because of how quickly some of this news is circulating. But, John, we're going to talk with Ronnie Bell here in a bit. Plenty, of course, made about the Michigan wide receiver group this time last year with the excitement around the Josh Gattis speed and space offense, the talent that Michigan possessed with Tariq Black, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and Nico Collins as the headliners. Now, 1 year later, Tariq Black had transferred to Texas. DPJ is playing for the Cleveland Browns, and Nico Collins is the lone returner after he was probably the most impactful of the three last season. But when you look at the emergence of guys like Ronnie Bell and Mike Sainristil, Giles Jackson, especially on special teams, and some of the intriguing young guys, does this year's group, to you, have just as much potential as 2019, 1 year ago today?
I think they do, and I actually think they have more potential because we saw some of the young guys, whether it's Mike Sainristil, Giles Jackson, Cornelius Johnson, you know, we've got some young kids coming in as recruits, you know, like an A.J. Henning, or a Roman Wilson, where you to be explosive in today's football, you've got to have speed. And I really think that this group has the speed to be able to stretch the field. They may not be as tall as some of the wide receiver groups that we've seen in the past, but, you know, excluding Nico Collins. But I do believe that this team and this group of receivers will be able to stretch the field east and west, north and south, and be able to create opportunities. Now it comes down to who do we pick at quarterback and who can get the ball to, you know, who the open receiver. I mean, it sounds complicated when you think about speed and space and route trees and all this stuff, but it's the basics of football, no matter what offense you run, remain the same. You have to find a way to get the ball to your playmakers. If there's an open receiver and you can hit them, move the ball down the field. If you have a big offensive line and you can block and you can open holes for a talented group of running backs, which Michigan should have this year, as well as talented up front, you should be able to run the ball. Put those two together. Things should look good this year on offense. Now it's a matter of going out and executing. And that's always, you know, you can't just play a game on paper. You know, it's you hear the term paper champions and all this stuff. You've got to go out and you've got to perform. And that's what we want to see from this year's Michigan football team.
Speaking of having offensive success, John, we have not talked nearly enough about the offensive line. That is one of the many things that is very unique about 2020. Give me an update. How are you feeling about that offensive line and what you're hearing about the significant offensive line battles for Michigan?
Well, I'm excited about this year's offensive line, and I'll give you a couple of reasons why. And you know, everybody talks about the you know, losing four guys all getting drafted in the NFL, which is great. And then you've got a guy like Jalen Mayfield at right tackle, who played an outstanding season last year, got better every game, played extremely well against Ohio State and Chase Young last year. Ryan Hayes was given some opportunity early on, and we saw him get some experience and develop. You've got two tackles that I think are going to be very good players, not just at the college level, but at the NFL level as well. And then you start to look inside and you say, okay, well, who are those guys going to be? And then you go down the list of possibilities: Carson Barnhart, Nolan Rumbler, Zach Carpenter, Chuck Filiaga, Andrew Stuber, you know, Trevor Keegan, Trent A. Jones. Some of those guys will be backup tackles. Some of them will you know, be able to rotate in there inside. We have an inexperienced three inside, but we are going to have very talented players. So at times it's going to look like, hey, this is a really good offensive line. Other times it'll look like just what it is, young and inexperienced. Hopefully they can minimize some of those moments and continue to learn and develop throughout the season. But I'm excited about what we have coming up on this offensive line.
And lastly, John, something that we haven't talked about because of, again, how crazy this is. Isaiah Livers is coming back for Michigan basketball. He'll be a senior. He tested the NBA draft waters. And not just from the basketball perspective, but who he is. He's an in-state kid. He loves the university. I'm thrilled that he's coming back, both as a person and as an athlete, from what he brings to the table. It's a great, it feels like a get, because you just didn't know what was going to happen. But we've seen it with football players coming back. I know you compare Nico Collins' return to Isaiah Livers. I think they're both pretty similar, because not only do they raise the team's ceilings, I think they raise the team's floors.
Well, they do, and when you think about some of the young players or inexperienced players on the basketball team that are going to get an opportunity to play this year, you've got transfers that are going to be stepping in. When you have an opportunity for a player like Isaiah Livers to return and add some stability, add some experience, and I quite honestly, for him, the opportunity to come back and have a healthy season. You know, just think about what he did last year and the impact that he had when he was on the court, but he was dinged up for a lot of the year. You bring him back, now all of a sudden, hey, you can you get some experience back, you get a playmaker back, a guy that can create his own shot, a guy that can create shots for other players, and then, you know, like Nico Collins coming back. When you have the opportunity, big play potential from Nico Collins, we've seen that. We saw that. We were introduced to it in the Notre Dame game 2 years ago when he had a 52-yard pass reception. When you have that ability, and then you put that speed and some of those other guys like a Ronnie Bell and a San Ristil and a Giles Jackson, the playmaking ability of some of those guys, I think this is it's an opportunity for Michigan to take that next step offensively and be a dominating offense.
John, I think one player for Michigan who can help this team take a big step forward on the football field is Ronnie Bell, and it's always fun when we catch up with a guy that we've all kind of talked about as a potential captain down the road in his Michigan career.
Yeah, and I love the way that he plays the game. You know, it, and we saw him, you know, struggle at times last year, and probably no more than at the Penn State game when, you know, at the end of the game, had an opportunity to make a catch. It didn't happen. But when you hear him talk and you talk about the things that he is working on to improve for this year, when I watch him play, and a guy that when he catches the ball is looking to gain yards, not to run out of bounds. He wants to get that extra yard. When he doesn't have the football, I want everybody this year, when you watch Ronnie Bell play, watch him when he is not the target. And watch how he plays. That is how football is supposed to be played. But I think everybody will enjoy the conversation I had with Ronnie Bell. He's next. We are now joined on In the Trenches by Ronnie Bell, junior wide receiver. And Ronnie, first of all, thanks for joining us. What type of challenges has this offseason been for you?
I mean, honestly, the biggest challenge would probably be keeping weight, you know, gaining and keeping weight, you know, just eating like the same that you're eating when you're in the facility the whole time. You know, you eat some kind of different, being on your own, you know, not as healthy or not as much. So I think that was probably the biggest challenge.
How much were you able to communicate with Ben Herbert and the strength staff and Abigail O'Connor and the nutritionist?
It was like every day. Everybody was in a group chat. And, I mean, it was an everyday thing. You know, they sent, like, workouts. Abigail, we'd have to send, like, what we were eating to her. So, I mean, communication-wise, I think was solid.
When this all started, did you head home right away?
Not right away. I think I headed home maybe like a week later than everybody else.
What was it like taking finishing your semester all online? Because I've got kids that are in, you know, middle school and high school. Obviously, college is a different level. What was it like as a college student trying to stay up, trying to learn, trying to figure out things, all doing it online?
And no, it was difficult just because, you know, it's different and like it's college. So like, like you said, it's not high school, middle school. Like it's hard to try and, you know, just communication with your teachers, your professors, just because I feel like, you know, the communication is already a little off with a professor just because, you know, they have so many students. And then, you know, once you go home and now you're trying to communicate everything through email and it's just. I felt like that was by far the most difficult part of the whole deal, figuring out like what they want from you, from what the professors want.
Yeah, and how was that communication? Were the professors, I got to imagine, they were doing the best they could as well to communicate with their students?
Yeah, right. Like a lot of professors too, like they kind of, you know, like in college, a lot of them do their own thing. So like the online portion of like how a lot of teachers would do it, they don't run it. So like, for example, like Canvas, which is like a big thing that Michigan does, like a lot of my professors didn't even use Canvas. So like going online was like a whole different world for a lot of professors. And so like it was a big transition for everybody, including the professors and the students, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you're back in Ann Arbor now. What went into, were you concerned when you made that decision to come back to Ann Arbor instead of being at home? Was there any concerns that you had?
No, there's no concerns. I was just excited, you know, I'm not tired of being home. Of course, I love being home, but I was more so excited because I'm finally in like my own apartment and stuff now. So it's like, it was just an exciting thing to be able to come home or come back here and be in my own apartment, be in my own space kind of deal.
That's right, because the first 2 years you're in the dorm. Now you got your own place. What was that like, just finally being able to roll into your own place?
It's just, you know, like I said, it was just, you know, you feel old kind of, but it was cool.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today. When you look back at last football season, and there were a lot of peaks or a lot of valleys, what were some lessons that you learned and some things that you look back and you say, you know what, that I need to work on that going into next football season?
Probably just, you know, I think probably one of the biggest things when I look back at from the season this past year, just, you know, season, you know, like contested catches type deal. I want to, you know, make every catch, of course. I want that to be first and foremost something that I do, you know, as a receiver. And then another thing would be just, you know, just diving into more film and being able to dissect the defense pre-snap, you know, like even more at a higher level than before. And, you know, just little things like that, I guess. The big thing, too, would definitely be just the film and dissecting the defense, because I feel like I can always grow in that area.
How much more comfortable do you feel in year two under this new offense?
I feel like I'm just as comfortable, if not more comfortable. I'm very comfortable, because I was comfortable last year, I felt, you know.
With the quarterbacks, I've been a part of new offenses, and even though individuals may understand it, it's being able to see thing from the quarterback's perspective or understand protection from the offensive line perspective. Is there a greater grasp of all of the moving parts in this offense?
Yeah, that's like the next step. I feel like for me is, you know, like I want to be able to look at it almost like the quarterback, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to be able to know everything about the defense the same way the quarterback does. Like, that's always been, like, a big goal of mine. to be able to know everything like that, just like the quarterbacks, you know. And because I feel like once you do that, especially like the whole team, like offensively, if everybody's on that, if everybody is just as detailed from a understanding of the offense and the defense's perspective, like the quarterbacks, if everybody is on that level, I feel like our offense, you know, can just keep moving forward and go so much because everybody will be on the same page, you know.
That's one of the things I've felt too, is like once you understand everything, everything seems to slow down a little bit, and it just makes the decisions that you make under, you know, under duress, under stress, a little bit easier.
Right, 100%.
Now, we know that there's, obviously, Shea Patterson graduated. He was a starter for the last 2 years. There's going to be a quarterback battle. When you look at those three guys that are really, you know, in the lead right now, what is it that you see from those three guys, and what have you learned from them just in terms of their understanding of the offense and how they see things?
Just, you know, working with students for the last, like, I don't know how many weeks we've been here. But just working with those guys, you know, I just see just, you know, just kind of how I was just talking about, like, with the detail, you know, just the amount of detail that they all have in their own, like, art, you know, with what they do at quarterback. Like, they all three have, like, a different kind of way of kind of like the way they play. It's like, not necessarily similar, but they're all great, you know what I'm saying, like, in their own separate ways. And that's, like, I think that's, like, will make probably the decision of like who's going to be the quarterback like the craziest thing, because like they're all three kind of different players, but all three just amazing players and have perfected their art, or I mean they have crafted their art like at such a high level. Like I think it's going to be a tough decision, and I mean it's just amazing working with those guys. And as a receiver, you know, you're lucky because I mean, you can't go wrong with whoever's in the game, no matter what's going on, what the situation is. We got three quarterbacks that are all just so elite.
When you look back there, or when you're in the huddle, and whether it's Joe Milton, Cade McNamara, Dylan McCaffrey, is there a different way that you operate as a receiver, or you're going out there to run your route the same way no matter who is at that quarterback position?
But so yeah, I've worked. We all receivers have worked with these quarterbacks so much. I mean, like at our speed, you know, like our top, whatever route running, however hard we're moving and running, like the quarterbacks are all on page with us and have that like in lock, you know. So as a receiver, when you line up, it doesn't really matter who's back there. You're gonna run your route, like you said, and you're gonna get open, and you're just move. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not necessarily a different pace to your route or different footwork to your route because of who's at quarterback. Like it's just a thing, you know.
When you heard that the Big Ten was going to conference only games, what was your initial reaction?
I was just excited because that sounded like somebody was trying to make it to where we play, and like before that it sounded like we wasn't going to be playing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, once we heard that, you know, it sounded like somebody, at least somebody's making an attempt, you know, to try and get us to play.
And I know, and I don't mean to cut you off, but when you talk about the excitement of, and I kind of felt the same way, like you know, when they did that, I felt like there was a path to actually playing football in 2020. How
right.
Emotionally for you, there have to have been a roller coaster and a range of emotions. Can you tell us what it's been like emotionally to go through this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, like, emotionally, it's been crazy because, you know, at the beginning, we all go home and nobody really knows what's going on. And I know me personally, like, when I went home, I'm thinking to myself, I'm about to be home for no more than, like, 5 days and I'm going to be right back. And, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't think anything of it. And then, you know, things started to get real serious. And before I knew it, I was at home for, like, a whole month. And it's like, yo, like, you know, when are we going back? When are we going back? And then, you know, the pandemic just kind of, it was honestly just kind of getting worse around that time. Like, it wasn't good at all, you know. So then it got kind of nervy to where you're looking at things like, you know, are we going to play? So now you're thinking you're not going to play. You go from thinking you're not going to play to coming up to school. Now you're excited to be back to school. You with all your teammates. You guys are working out. You guys are going hard, everything. Da, da, da. Like, around that time, though, when we were starting to work out. So, like, we've been working out maybe, like, 8 weeks or something like that. And, like, maybe, like, 2 weeks in, like, I can't remember what happened, but I think who was it? Teams in the Big Ten started canceling their summer workouts.
Mm-hmm.
And so when teams started doing that, you know, it's kind of like, dang, we're not going to play. And then like a week later, they announced the Big Ten like only schedule. And it was like, oh, snap. Like, you know, like we might play. Like they're trying to make it so we just play Big Ten. Da, da, da. So now you're excited about that. And now it's just like, you're just kind of holding your breath because I think they were supposed to announce like, you know, like confirming a season or something not too long ago, like a couple of days ago. And then they didn't. So I don't know. Emotionally, it's all over the place. So you got to try and not get wrapped up in the decision-making of if there's going to be a season or not, though, because at the end of the day, you can only control what you can control. And if you're sitting there worried about things you can't control, you're going to drive yourself crazy.
Yes, because and for those of us that are outside of it, looking in, there it doesn't seem like there's anything that we can control. And on a day-to-day basis, you know, it's you wake up and there's something you look at and you're like, yeah, we're going to have football. And then there's something else you're like, well, I don't know.
over and over again.
And when I've talked to Josh Ross, I talked to Carlo Kemp last week. Now I'm talking to you, and the one thing that you guys have all said is, hey, we can only control what we control. Is that something that your coaches and Coach Harbaugh are telling you guys, hey, just don't worry about what's happening, just control what you guys can control?
No, I mean, that's something my dad has always preached to me. That's something like when I was, you know, my dad, he just kind of preached that. And like, it kind of kept me sane throughout. Just anything I got going on, no matter what sport I'm playing, what I got going on, just control what you can control. That way you don't beat yourself up about things that you know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, things you can't control, you like, if you let it stress you, you're going to go crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sitting there going crazy myself. I can only imagine what you guys are going through. But when you look at the wide receiver room, and obviously Nico is coming back for his senior season. You've got some experience. We saw some young guys last year, whether it was Cornelius or Giles, gain some experience. What do you see when you look in that wide receiver room?
Just, I mean, I'm just beyond excited for everybody in that room because, you know, I feel like everybody in the room has a chip on their shoulder and, like, really, you know what I'm saying, just wants to prove themselves, you know? And, like, I feel like, you know, guys that are hungry like that, it just makes for, first of all, fun to be around. Like, it is a blast to be around all those guys. And they all just train so, I mean, like, it's just so exciting because, like you said, last year, a lot of guys got their feet in the water, and then Nico coming back. I mean, it's just like I'm head over heels excited for what the season's gonna bring.
This offense has the potential to be unbelievably explosive, and we heard last year Josh Gattis talk about speed and space. When you hear him say that and you look at what you are trying to accomplish, not just as a wide receiving group or as an offense, but you as Ronnie Bell out on the field, what does that mean to you?
Man, just make playmakers, you know. I feel like that just means, you know, make plays, you know. Speed and space is playmakers making plays. And that's what that means to me. That's what I think about. That's what I picture when I hear the phrase speed and space.
What goals do you have going into this football season?
Personal goals? Goal-wise, it's just, you know, be the best that I can be. And, like, the biggest thing for me, I feel like, is just you can never take your foot off the gas, in my eyes. Like, I just feel like no matter what's going on, no matter what is happening, winning games, losing games, drawing games, no matter what we got going on, like never take your foot off the pedal and just keep working, keep going, and keep proving yourself, you know, keep going, you know what I'm saying? Just don't take your foot off the pedal for nothing.
When I watch guys play, you know, I want to watch and see what they're doing when the ball's not coming to them, for the receivers, the running backs, what happens when they have contact. When I watch you play, there is there's an attitude, there's a chip on your shoulder, there's that, you know, I've got to get that extra yard, I've got to catch this ball. What is it? Is it experience? Is it just something that's innate in you? What is it that drives you to be that type of player?
I just feel like it's a chip that I've developed on my shoulder in the last, I don't know how many years. I think it really started, honestly, in high school. You know, my senior year, coming out of high school, like, all I wanted to do was play football. And just, I think the fact that, like, I just wasn't recruited and was told by coaches that I just wasn't a football player, you know, like, I feel like that just developed such a chip that, like, that's just how I feel like that's how I've been ever since, as long as I can remember. And I feel like I'm always going to be that way because of that scenario, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I feel like that's kind of where that chip and that always going hard kind of deal came from. Like, it's hard to not have a chip, you know, and not want so bad whenever, you know what I'm saying, you feel like you not want it, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like I feel like that's kind of what happened to me my senior year. And it kind of just fired me up to a whole nother thing, you know, a whole nother level of just kind of being crazy when it came to proving people wrong and going hard.
For those of our listeners that don't know, we're talking to Ronnie Bell right now, wide receiver. You were recruited as a basketball player, and you just mentioned that, you know, a lot of people said, hey, you can't play football. You chose Michigan. Jim Harbaugh saw you and saw something in you, and I'm glad he did, because I think you're a great addition to this football program, this team, and the history that is the University of Michigan, especially at that position. But I want to know from your perspective, and it's okay to say it's yourself, who is the best basketball player on the football team?
Oh, that's not even close. That is me, 1,000%. that was not enough for question.
What's the strength of your basketball game? Is it driving? Is it creating shots? Are you a distance shooter? What's the deal?
100%. I create a shot. I've always had a tight little handle. I feel like I've always, you know, I get to the basket, explode, finish at the rim, and the jumper, I trained with that one dude, Michael Jordan. You know, he taught me like everything I know. So the jumper is elite, you know, Steph Curry type.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm doing my scouting report in case we ever get a chance to go one-on-one. I know what I got to do, but I really appreciate your time. You know what? One more. I want to actually ask you this. Any chance we might see a two-sport guy in Ronnie Bell?
Hey, if the opportunity presents itself, I would take that 1,000% and run with it.
Good. That'd be exciting. We'd love to have it. So, hey, Ronnie, thanks for joining us today. Best of luck. And again, hey, try and control what you could control and stay even keeled. I appreciate you talking to us, man.
100%. Thank you.
Boy, Ronnie is a good kid. I really enjoy talking to him. I hope you enjoyed listening to him. That was Ronnie Bell, wide receiver from Michigan this year. Again, next week, it's a big week for us here at the podcast. The podcast name will be switching to MGO Blue Podcast with John Jansen. In the Trenches will remain, and that is exclusively football. Conquering Heroes will come out on Tuesday. We will have Daryl Conway with an update on how the coronavirus is affecting the Michigan Athletic Campus and trying to get those fall sports up and running. Later in the week, Kids Go Blue Club, presented by UMCU, is launching a new app that will be available on Friday, August 7th. Make sure you download it. You can go to the MGO Blue website, mgoblue.com/kidsclub, to get more information. A lot of great events for the youngsters in that. I'm hoping to be a part of that as well, because that is the future of our fan base. Maybe a couple of former or future football players in there as well. So excited to involve the young generation in becoming Michigan Wolverines. We will talk to you next week here on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.